It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. In case you haven't noticed, the presidential election is taking place. And over the course of the history of elections in this country, there have been moments in which comics have gotten involved, comics with more than enough material for humorous monologues and satire. From Pogo to Pat Paulson, Maze Tunes cartoonist and pop culture contributor Joe Woese joins us for a look at comical presidential candidates from the past. Joe Woese, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
You notice how we say from the past, because apparently there's no need for them now.
You know, that was the hardest thing in writing this article, was not to make a reference to contemporary candidates.
And here I'm practically forcing you into that. All right, well, we're going to veer. We're going to make a hard left, get away from that. Not a political left, but just, you know, just going in the opposite direction. What are some of the earliest comic and comedian presidential candidates? I mean,
probably the first one is Augustus Mutt from the comic strip Mutt and Jeff.
Okay. Who, I never knew his first name was Augustus.
See, you learn a lot when I'm on the show, right?
Did they call him Augie for short?
They just called him Mutt. Mutt and Jeff, that's where it comes from. And that was 1908. So that's sort of the first time you see people with campaign buttons for a fictional character. And then in 1928, you have Will Rogers. And it becomes sort of a phenomenon. He starts out by writing these campaign articles from the campaign trail and Life magazine, and then it sort of takes on a life of its own. He's doing radio addresses. He's doing tours and stops and, you know, with one big campaign promise: if elected, I will not serve.
which is interesting. And I guess he pretty much knew that he wasn't going to win. But he was doing it for there had to be some reason for him doing it. What would it have been?
You know, he really was this great political commentary. He's the first sort of political stand-up comic.
Right. So it was for laughs, but not just for laughs.
It was for laughs, but it was really to bring, the issues to the forefront of, you know, he talked a lot about how, you know, the politicians are lying to the farmers that, you know, whatever they say now, once they get in office, they have no intention of doing it. You know, one of my favorite things about Will Rogers is after he had passed away, they put a statue to him in Washington, D.C., and it's facing towards Congress to keep an eye on them. Mm. But he actually, allegedly, they didn't keep track of these votes, the write-in votes, but allegedly he won Washington, D.C.
Right, which would have made him like George McGovern, who won Washington, D.C. and Massachusetts, and that was it.
So he
actually did almost as well as McGovern. These campaigns, obviously, they're meant to be satirical, but do they have a real-world impact?
They do. You know, not just in bringing issues to the forefront through, you know, the shielding of humor makes us much more palatable, that spoonful of sugar. But also, you know, in 1968, you had two candidates who came forward and took away a lot of the votes from Hubert Humphrey. So you have also McGovern. You had these people who were taking votes away, like Pat Paulson and Dick Gregory, these, you know, really liberal, you know, comedians, but college students were voting for them.
Well, yeah, in McGovern's case, RFK, Robert Kennedy, had been assassinated, and the Democrats were encouraging him to kind of pick up the baton from there. You also had Eugene McCarthy in 68. So there were, I hate to say it, but I'm old enough to remember the whole Pat Paulson thing. And it was hilarious and probably wouldn't have been as, it was almost like he wasn't trying to be funny. He did it in such a deadpan way that you couldn't help but laugh at what he was doing on the Smothers Brothers show.
Oh, yes. And you know, it's funny you mentioned Robert Kennedy, because Robert Kennedy actually endorsed Pat Paulson for president.
You said,
loosely.
Yeah, you wrote an article about this, and you said begrudgingly.
Which, yes.
What does that mean exactly?
Tommy Smothers was doing the interview and put him on the spot. And, you know, he had no idea who Pat Paulson was. But, you know, when Tommy Smothers kind of puts you on the spot, I guess you say whatever they tell you on the camera.
And so, what's interesting, and we'll put a photo of this on our website, but you have brought and bestowed upon me, and I'm really touched by this because this is worth something, a Pat Paulson for President, United We Sit campaign button.
Yes.
This is really something. And what's interesting about him is it wasn't just 68. He ran into perpetuity until, I want to say until he died, but then even he's even running posthumously.
Even posthumously, he runs. You know, it's amazing. He's the most successful comedian candidate. You know, he actually came in second to Bill Clinton in one of the primaries. Came in second to George Bush. He's the only comedian candidate who ran as, you know, strictly a comedy campaign who actually got on primary ballots, both as a Democrat and a Republican, although his actual party was the Straight Talk American Government Party, or STAG Party. So that was his original party.
Well, that's kind of like, that plays right into Gracie Allen, who was, her party was the birthday party.
The birthday party,
it was all
yes.
about the party. So let's talk about Gracie Allen of Burns and Allen. Of course, everybody remembers George Burns. Unfortunately, Gracie Allen preceded him into eternity many years before George passed away, I think nearly at the age of 100.
Yeah, he had just reached 100.
Just reached 100. Away, yeah. So she was one of the first women to run for president in 1940. What was the reaction to her campaign?
It was just phenomenal. It was this landmark occasion. Despite it being just this comedian running for president, she had this sort of no-nonsense platform, you know, down with common sense. You know, it was just more nonsense means no nonsense.
Which was her character. She was much like Judy Holliday, kind of playing the dumb blonde, but in real life, she was actually a very intelligent woman.
Well, and in her playing that sort of that dumb character, there was a lot of this simple, obvious wisdom that she could share. She could really say things sort of as they were without any sort of, you know, political undertones or anything. She would just say what was on her mind, and it came off very funny. She actually did a whistle-stop campaign. She visited, I think it was 12 different states. She was endorsed by Harvard as their candidate. She became this sort of phenomenon. People loved her. She actually got over 30,000 write-in votes. Which stood as the record for women getting votes for almost 30 years.
And I feel compelled to explain things like whistle stop. That meant a train. This is when, you know, train was the main way to travel, and candidates would stop in towns, and the whistle stop meant the train was bellowing a whistle to almost to summon people to the speech.
Yes, that's exactly what it was. And again, you know, people just loved her. She was this lovable character, and you know, they really got behind the idea of, you know, there's a lot of women voted for him. They, you know, it's like, oh, a woman candidate. They were actually excited about it.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm not old enough to remember whistle stop. The actual, you know. We're talking with Joe Wose, who's our contributor about comic presidential candidates. We're swiftly, this is going by so quickly. We've got 2 minutes left. We have to talk about Dick Gregory. This is a guy who really made an impact. He was a stand-up comedian, but anybody who's followed his career knows that he had taken serious stands on things like civil rights. Were there any lighter moments?
You know, there were. Not a whole lot of them, because he was very serious about this campaign. He received over 200,000 votes by the time it was done as a write-in candidate. One of the lighter sides is for foreign aid, he proposed raising those funds by adding paid toilets in all federal buildings. He also had a bit of a scandal on his hands. He had produced dollar bills with his picture on it as, you know, campaign paraphernalia. He would hand these out. And the FBI actually cracked down and said you can't have, you know, U.S. currency that is basically a forgery and counterfeit.
Yeah, there's a photo of it accompanying your article. And it looks like a $1 bill.
Yes, but he argued successfully there's no way this could be an actual American bill because there will never be a black man on an American bill. And that was his
so
argument.
So far, he's right.
And so far, he's right. But
and there's a
changed.
Peace sign on there, which that's a giveaway. And then at the bottom, instead of saying $1, it says one vote. Okay, down to about a minute or less here. You actually worked on one of these comic campaigns. Whose was it?
I actually worked on Pat Paulson's campaign.
No kidding. Did you meet the candidate?
I did not meet him. We had a lot of phone conversations. I actually did some artwork for projects for him, and we endorsed him when I was at Carlo College. We were a college newspaper, endorsed Pat Paulson, and we became good friends after that.
And, of course, we know that you're tight with Charles Schulz, the Peanuts creator, and Snoopy had a run for president, right?
Yes, yes. There was actually an album from the Royal Guardsmen called Snoopy for President. So another character that just still runs to this day. huge following.
I had a 45 of the Guardsman's song about Snoopy and the Red Baron.
Yes, yes.
Would Snoopy get your vote?
Well, I would have to say Pat Paulson would get my vote. And I even have a campaign slogan for him. Vote for the late Pat Paulson. Better late than never.
Ah, so you're encouraging people to do that in 2016.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Joe Woes, our culture contributor and May's Two's cartoonist, looking at comical presidential candidates from the past. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you for having me.
We're out of time. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. See you tomorrow.